Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 142 for February 5th, 2010, Snake in the Brass. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Astaro Corporation, makers of the Astaro Security Gateway. To try the Astaro Security Gateway free in your business, call 877-4-ASTARO. Windows Weekly is brought to you by GoToAssist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/Windows. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/Windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show that covers everything there is to know about that faded entity that used to be Microsoft.
We had a good run, Leo.
I told you we'd be calling this the iPad show.
Oh dear.
Mary Jo's going, what did I get myself into? Paul Thurrott is here.
That's how we pronounce iPod in Boston. So.
iPad.
So Mary Jo Foley is also here with Paul Thurrott. Mary Jo is the author of the All About Microsoft blog at ZDNet, and allaboutmicrosoft.com is the place where you can see that. Welcome, Mary Jo. It's great to have you on the show again.
Thanks, Leo.
Yep. And Paul is also here, of course, editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com. Joyce sounds like a palindrome or something. I say it backwards and I say it forwards. It's not, but it feels that way. And today we are going to talk about all things Microsoft. And I take it Mary Jo is here because of the article in the New York Times.
She's my new psychotherapist.
It's okay, Paul. It's going
to
be okay.
I called her this morning and I needed some help.
You needed to be talked off the ledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, should we start with that, Paul? I mean, is that the first
absolutely.
I'm going to download your lineup.
Yeah, please do. No, don't do it before we start. That's fine. You can do it now.
I like to be surprised. I like to be amused, but I think it is an appropriate thing to start with since
it is the first subject. Yes.
Yeah, it certainly took everybody. Well, I don't know. Did it take people off guard? Who is this? First of all, who is this guy?
Came out of the blue. So I would. To preface this, what I would say is a couple of days ago, I want to say, an ex-Microsoftie, Don Dodge, wrote a blog post, another blog post about, and he's been writing blog posts since he left Microsoft, and he talked about his transition to the Mac and to Google services and how seamless it all was, and it's funny because he's discovering things that I think a lot of us knew long ago, which is somewhat amusing to me. So I kind of put that aside, and I meant to comment on it, you know, probably in a blog post, because there were some things I really didn't disagree with that he wrote, and then there were a bunch of things he wrote that I do agree with, of course. But then this morning I woke up and I read the New York Times, and there's an editorial about Microsoft's decline, essentially. And of course, when I saw the title of the article, I knew I had to read it. And then as I'm reading it, it becomes obvious that it's written by someone who worked at Microsoft, and I'm thinking, my goodness, you know. A lot of high-profile Microsofties have left the company, possibly the country. left the company recently, and I'm wondering, you know, did one of them decide to use this venue to, you know, speak out against Microsoft? So I flipped to the back of the story to see who it was, and it was, I've already forgotten his name, Dick Brass. Now which sounds like a porn name, I'll just throw it
out there. It does.
So, but...
He was brass at Microsoft. He was a vice president.
He was. Now, the thing is, my memory is so horrible, I didn't recognize this name. And I thought, you know, if there's anyone on this earth who would know who this person was, it would be Mary Jo Foley. I need to understand what's going on here. And so I called her up. But the thing that's interesting about this guy to me is he left the company almost 6 years ago. So this morning, for some reason, there's an editorial by this guy sort of questioning why a lot of the innovative things that are coming out now in the computer industry and a lot of the future technology that we're getting is not coming from Microsoft. it's coming from Microsoft's competitors. And you know, why is that? Mary Jo, please tell me why that is.
Well, first of all, who is Dick Brass?
Yes, who is
Dick? Dick Brass is a former corporate VP at Microsoft, and he helped Bill Gates launch the first tablet. That's kind of his biggest claim to fame.
Well, so that's why he's writing now, because the iPad's out, right?
Yes, that's what I thought. I'm like, okay, he's had all this pent-up rage about the failure of the tablet, and suddenly he's like, I can't hold it in anymore. I've got to write something.
Right.
That's my guess about the timing. But still, I agree with Paul. It's a little odd. The guy left, you know, in 2004. And here he is expounding on why Microsoft's doomed.
So, do you reject all his statements?
I reject it wholeheartedly, Leo.
Because I thought, well, finally, somebody's giving us an inside look as to... I mean, you and I have talked about this before, about Microsoft's failed marketing, about the difficulty, and sometimes it seems that they have in having, you know, what they call eating the baby or killing the baby. And boy, he highlighted some internecine struggles that really would hobble a company.
And that is the interesting part of the story. I think I must have told you on this podcast the last time, and I know I talked to Mary Jo about this when I saw her probably at PDC. Last time I went to Microsoft, they'd open up this new portion of the campus. Microsoft's campus is the size of the town I live in.
Yeah.
In fact, there are probably more people working there than I think there are twice as many people working there as live in the town I live in. It is humongous. It's so big you can't walk from one end of the other to the other, because you have to take cars and shuttles and so forth, and it spans a highway. There are pieces of it all over Western Washington State. It's humongous. So they've opened this new part of it called the Willows. It's essentially a high-end shopping mall
inside the
Microsoft campus.
Wow.
And, you know, as you walk through this thing, you think, my goodness, this company must be super successful. Everything they do must be gold. I mean, this place is like the Magic Kingdom here. And, of course, they open this thing just as they're laying off, you know, 5,000 people. Every one of their products except for Windows is either, you know, stillborn or falling in some way, essentially. And it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. You know, it just seemed like an odd thing to have opened. So there's that aspect of it. We've talked about this stuff, you know, the general aura of the company. Microsoft will probably be a big company for a long time, but that doesn't mean they're going to be an interesting company. You know, IBM is a humongous company. They're not interesting to me in the slightest. And I think for tech enthusiasts or people who are interested in, you know, the latest and the greatest and what's new and all that stuff, I mean, that's not the type of company we're particularly intrigued by. And it does feel like Microsoft is heading in this direction. It doesn't mean it's inevitable.
And IBM is still massively successful. They have many, many patents. They're not fading away or going away. But
there are pharmaceutical companies who are also successful that are humongous that I don't care about.
Yeah. They're not relevant, I guess, right?
Not to me.
Yeah.
Well, you know, another thing I thought was interesting about Dick Brass's story was he was highlighting a lot of things that I think those of us who really focus on Microsoft kind of take as, of course they do that. You know, like he described how at Microsoft they used to pit one team secretly against another team inside. And those of us who cover Microsoft really closely know that's true. Like the whole NetDocs versus Office thing that happened in 2001. You know, there's many examples of that. And I think for the general public to hear that, they're like, what? Why are they doing that?
Yeah, it sounds dysfunctional, to be honest.
You mean they treat you know, people within the company as badly as they treat their partners and customers? it's sort of a shock. I mean, we understood that this was a big, aggressive company, but the fact that they do that internally. And I would have to say the Dick Brass editorial, the only interesting part of it was those details, the things about ClearType, the technology.
Well, that was kind of a shocker.
Yeah. He worded this. He said that the head of the Office business said that it made his head
hurt. I knew you were
going
to bring this up. Well,
and who was he referring to, of course?
Steven Sinofsky.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't use his name.
No.
Oh, so this is why we need the...
He might as well.
Yeah.
He might as well.
Well, to people like
maybe
you, but not to people
who
like
it
me.
Was.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what it was.
I can't remember his name. Of course, Sinofsky went on to run the Windows 7 launcher, right? Wasn't it his?
purpose.
Yes. Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he
did. Or the great bloodletting, as we may call it.
So, okay, so that's an interesting story. He said that his team came up with clear type. They said, we figure out a way on LCD screens to use the color pixels to really improve type quality. Of course, we've used clear type, but he said Microsoft sat on that technology because members of the other division, like Sanofsky at the Office division, didn't like it, or it wasn't invented there.
They saw it as a threat, and if they couldn't run it, if they couldn't be in charge of it, they didn't want it.
Well, yeah, that was a very interesting. He said one of the heads, was it Sanofsky, said it was blatant. Didn't say it hurt my head. He said, you know what, we'll be glad to implement it, but it's got to be my division, my people, and I get credit for it.
Sure,
that was the pocket PC guy.
Pocket PC guy. That's right.
Yeah. I mean, that's another one of those. I kind of went, yeah, Microsoft's a very, very political place. And the way you succeed if you're a manager in Microsoft is you get more people to report to you than anybody else. It doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter how much money you make. You try to accumulate as many people under you as you can. And again, it's like he's airing Microsoft's dirty laundry. But it's the way it is at Microsoft.
Doesn't this sound
like a company that's too big? You know, this is what happens, right? When you get to this point where this is the mentality of people there, it is, in fact, as he says, a dysfunctional corporate culture. And it's hard not to sense that when you're there because it's so huge.
Yeah.
I don't even understand. It's amazing that this company releases anything that works with anything else that this company makes. I mean, it really is amazing, you know?
And well, as we know, a lot of times one side of Microsoft doesn't even know the other side's doing something. And, you know, like I'm sure you've had this, Paul, where you call to get a comment on something and you're like, well, you know, the such and such team's doing this. And they're like, no, they're not.
Like, what? Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, yeah, they are. Actually, they have a beta. Did you know? And they're like, no, you're wrong.
I've been told by more than one person there that they like keeping up with my stuff because it's the only way they can hear about what's going on at the company they work for, because there's no real communication inside about what everyone else is doing.
So is this a sad revelation? It sounds like to you guys it's something you've known all along. Mary Jo, are you saddened by this article?
No, I'm not saddened by this article. I think, you know, I'll say I believe that people who are in Microsoft's management know this is a huge problem for them. They know they're too big to be agile and to be innovative. And that's why they're trying all these things like setting up labs, like, you know, the new Fuse Lab and Dev Lab and Live Labs. They're trying all these things. Like, how can we kind of make the company a bunch of loosely joined smaller parts that have more of a chance of turning out something innovative?
You could break it up. That would be
enough. Somebody suggested that before.
Yeah. I think a guy named Paul Thurrott.
I think she means the judge. But
The judge, sure. Every other pundit in the world has also, I mean, and Dvorak spent a lot of time talking about Microsoft. Is that the solution?
I guess the point here, though, is so that stuff is interesting. You know, the details about specific products and how different people at Microsoft tried to, you know, put the kibosh on certain technologies because they didn't come out of there. That's interesting.
Good dish.
But I think it's important to remember that if you want to look at very specific products, so we can just talk about the ones that, you know, where Apple has taken off in the market and Microsoft hasn't, you know, smartphones. Actually, that might be it. MP3 players, you know, et cetera. These are businesses that Microsoft has been in for a long time, and Apple blew by them. You know, and there are other cases where companies like Google has blown by Microsoft in certain areas, and we expect them to in other areas. So why is this? You know, what has happened? And it's easy after the fact to look back and say, well, yes, this was obvious. I saw this coming, and you know, this was inevitable. And you know, Microsoft has been on the wrong path for a long, long time. But you know, the truth is, when you go back and you look at what Microsoft did in many cases, not in all cases, but in many cases, you know, what they did made sense for the time. You know, and it's easy now looking back to say, hey, they blew it. But you know, when Microsoft got into the digital music market, for example, they did it the way they did it with the PC market. They didn't create solutions that competed with anyone else. They created a platform, and they allowed other people to make the software. They allowed other people to make the services. They allowed other people to make the devices. These things were all going to go out there and compete in this open and free market, and it would be great for everybody. Well, you know, that failed in the face of Apple's iPod. So it failed. Microsoft then went to do the Apple way with the Zune, and that failed. So, you know, does someone out there have any advice for how Microsoft could have controlled this market from day one? You know, it's easy to say after the fact that they blew it, but what was the right solution?
It's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback in any case. You know,
it's also, you know, and you and I talked about this a few weeks back, I think with respect to the iPad, you know, if you were to look at companies like Microsoft and Apple, and they have digital media solutions, they have computers and computer OSs and so forth. They have some online services. They have other things. They compete in many areas. And you're looking, you know, what's the next big area for them, right? Would you assume, which of these sounds like the bigger market? You know, we'll go after the living room because millions and millions of people sit in front of a TV every single day. Or right. we'll make another device that's sort of like the other stuff we already have. You know, which one of those seems right. like it would be the big deal? Well, right. the living room sounds like the big deal, the TV. Right. Right. Apple's solution there has failed just as badly as Microsoft's.
Right.
So Apple's way of doing things doesn't always work. So, you know, I don't know that there are lessons to be learned here other than that pretending that we all had the answers after the fact is not the way, you know, is not correct. It's just not the way it is. You know, no one is right all the time. But I look back at what Microsoft did, and, I, you know, certainly I've criticized the company over the years for different things. But by and large, when you look at a lot of the things he's complaining about, I'm not really sure what they could have done differently.
Right.
They had a tablet years ago. They did all kinds of different
several things. Tablets. They had the UMPC. Right. They had the
I don't mean like they had a tablet. I mean, they had a tablet platform that did handwriting recognition, voice recognition, touch, multi-touch. They did smaller tablets with a simple media center style interface, the origami stuff. I mean, they did all kinds of tablet type things. They put, obviously, they had the PDA stuff, which also had tablet-like capabilities. Now they have multi-touch smartphones. Okay, but none of this stuff has taken off. So what's the advice for Microsoft here? What did they do wrong? I mean, all they did was work on this thing for a decade.
Mary Jo, what do you think?
It's funny. Dick Brass, kind of at the end of his article in the New York Times, he sums it up and says, you know, what would have made Microsoft successful here is if they did what Apple did and they controlled the end-to-end platform. And a lot of times you hear people saying that's the solution. Microsoft needs to be more like Apple. They need to, you know, get the partners out of the way and actually build everything themselves, do more things like Xbox and Zune. And there's rumors that that's what they're going to do with these pink phones, that it's going to be a Microsoft-branded phone, you know. And so is that going to make people happy? Is that going to make it successful? I don't think it is.
No, I don't think so either. And by the way, as far as that goes, you know, Microsoft, to their detriment, unfortunately, has tried to copy the success they've had in the PC industry and other markets. It's never worked. But that success they had in the PC market continues to work. They just had a record quarter revenue-wise. They sold a record number of copies of Windows. And even though their partners didn't benefit from that a lot because most of the hardware sold on that end are netbooks, low-cost netbooks, Microsoft sold 60 million copies of Windows 7. It's kind of hard to say that they should have done it differently when the thing that they did do right continues to be the, you know, the cash cow for the company.
Well, Brass makes that point. I mean, he says, you know, Microsoft's still very profitable based on Windows and Office.
Yep.
But he also says that there's this big sucking sound as people who leave Microsoft because it's it no longer cool and or they're frustrated with the dysfunction. Well, so you know, so I think what he's saying is he's predicting not, you know, yeah, they're okay now, but it's not a long-term
prospect. I think we can all agree that it's been downhill ever since Dick Brass left Microsoft.
That might be the point. I don't know.
which I don't think was the point he was trying to make.
No, but, no and, you know, and I also think it's not fair to just say it's all sour grapes either, because I've seen a lot of people today saying, yeah, you know, Don Dodge was fired. That's why he's saying this. And Dick Brass was pushed out. That's why he's saying this. I mean, they both are bringing up some real points, you know, about Microsoft not being an ostrich and sticking its head in the sand and being more aware earlier of what's going on in the market instead of having Steve Ballmer say the iPhone's just a joke.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't help them.
Well, Mary Jo, you know this too. I mean, when you talk to the people that actually work in the trenches, so to speak, at Microsoft, they're very realistic about what's going on in the world.
They are.
And
are
very clear-headed about it, understand the competitive landscape, very, very much believe in what they're doing and all that. I mean, 201, all of the people that I know at Microsoft have been very dedicated and realistic. Actually, there are exceptions to that. But I mean, and unfortunately, you run into those exceptions in sort of a PR kind of standpoint. In other words, Leo and I had a discussion one time where I asked the Windows Mobile team about the iPhone. And I said, you know, they're kind of killing you in the consumer space. What are you going to do about that? And it was like, well, we're very happy for Apple. You know, they've proven our belief that smartphones can be successful with consumers.
We knew that. You know, I knew that.
I realize you're making lemonade here, but seriously. But as far as the actual, you know, the actual engineers and people on the product teams and all that, I've always been impressed by that. And anytime you feel like they're absolutely clueless, when you go and you talk to these people, you come away thinking, wow, they really do know what's going on. You know, these aren't people up in an ivory tower somewhere.
Well, Brass says, you know, if taken as individuals, it's a bunch of really smart people.
Yeah. But never before have so many really smart people failed so poorly.
Is it management's fault? Whose fault is it?
I don't know that you can point the finger.
You're saying when nobody could have predicted this, no one could have prevented it.
Microsoft grew and grew and grew. You know, right. One of the things that's alluded to in one of these blogger editorials is the notion that Google, for example, has this innovative streak going on now because supposedly they allow people to have X number of hours each week to work on their own side projects. And that's very interesting and everything. But Google is also a young company. So what they really did was formalize something that was obviously happening at Microsoft when it was growing and it was a smaller company, because then it was much younger by and large. You know, the average age of the individuals working there were younger. They didn't have families and wives and so forth. They were dedicated to what they were doing and they would push things through. You know, if you're at Microsoft now, you've got multiple layers of a hierarchy to get through. You can't push anything through. It's just a factor of the size of the company. It must be like walking in molasses.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, too, when you see Microsoft hire some really big name people, you know, and you're like, wow, I wonder what so-and-so is going to do there. And then they just disappear into the muck, you know, and it's like, where are they? You know, and
Ray Ozzie is the name that leaps to mind.
Ray Ozzie, chief software architect, right? You were talking about projects that are allowed to compete with each other. That's interesting internally. Ray Ozzie's doing it externally. They have at least three technologies that provide the exact same feature sets or roughly the same feature sets. You know, Live Mesh, Live Sync, and then also a Sync Toy for getting information synced up between different computers. He's allowing these things to compete in beta form out in public. So here you are as a consumer user. You want information to be duplicated from computer to computer. Which one do you use? And how do you know it's going to be around in 6 months or a year? You don't. And that's, Ray Ozzie's a genius. I get it. This is not a good idea. Figuring out one sync solution doesn't save Microsoft. I'm just using this as a very simple and obvious example.
Well, you're saying that Ozzie's in the quicksand of Microsoft at this point.
Well, no, he made the decision. He was asked about this, and he said, I want these things to compete. I want the best one to win.
Right.
And that's nice. But, you know, the fact is these things have been sitting there unchanged, basically, for months and months and months.
Right.
I get questions all the time about Live Mesh. Well, I noticed you use Live Mesh, but aren't you afraid it's still in beta? What's going on with it? You know, the Mac client appeared and it disappeared. There's a mobile client, sort of, but that disappeared. And, you know, does this thing continue on? You know, you can't trust software like that. So I just think it's bad. I just think that's bad management. But as far as Microsoft in general, I would say it's just too big of a company. There could be some young guy at Microsoft right now with the greatest idea in the world, and it's never going to happen at that company because no one will listen to him. No one.
One of the things he says, Dick Brass says in the article, which actually got me, it's in the very first paragraph. He says, Microsoft no longer brings you the future.
The funny thing is, this is refuted by almost everything else he said, because Microsoft shows us the future, but then we buy it from someone else, right? I mean, it's funny that Microsoft has actually been ahead on the curve of Apple in many cases, but it's Apple whose products have popularized the technology. That's the opposite of the way it used to be, and I think that's the point he's trying to make. You know, Microsoft didn't invent the GUI or the mouse and all that stuff, but it was their system that popularized it.
But you might say that was a few years earlier when Macintosh came out.
But that didn't popularize it.
It didn't do it. Sufficient. I see.
Right. In other words, it didn't reach a mass market until Windows 3.1 or whatever.
Right. So they have brought us the future in the past.
I feel like they show Microsoft us the future us a lot. Future. I mean, you know, but sometimes it's so far in advance, like Paul's saying, by the time it actually comes around, it's like, oh, that's not really what it is. You know, like those touch wall things they show, you know, it's like, yeah, okay. But I want to see something that's more immediate. You know, Courier is another one, right? It's like, is it going to look anything like that marketing video when it comes out? If it does, it's going to be a killer product.
But it won't. It won't, because right. you know that who's right. making it, Microsoft. So, you know, one of the other side effects, and we must have talked about this on the podcast before, is, you know, this is a company that can't do anything simple. And it's really aggravating. You know, if you go to Microsoft and you say, you know, years and years ago, like, we want to have a digital media solution, right? They don't just create like a little player and throw it in their OS. They create a platform. It has to have a media, you know, media codecs, audio and video and HD versions. And we're going to do this and that. And it's going to, it has all these APIs and SDKs and on and on and on it goes. And years go by before any of this stuff coalesces into anything meaningful. By the time it all comes out in some incredible form, oh, yeah, thanks for showing up. The iPod just already took off. So
right.
thanks for coming, guys. That was great. You know, it's like they can't get out of their way. You know, Apple, for whatever it's worth, if they do ship something, it's usually very simple. It's always lacking some features that everyone says are important and necessary. But they seem to have a laser-like intensity and ability to really hit the simplify button, you know, that Microsoft can't do it. This courier thing, that thing will never happen.
No.
Until all those other platform pieces around it all come together, and by then it's not going to matter. There'll be 30 million iPads in the world and no one will care anymore.
So one sense, I get the feeling that this is just the normal business cycle, that a company does bring you the future, gets vastly sure. successful, creates a monopoly, gets huge. IBM did the same thing, gets huge, yep. and then can no longer be nimble enough, especially in this particular business, to innovate and compete. And so they just kind of coast off into the sunset. Is that what's going on?
Like the Titanic?
No, but like, I mean, NASA? They're profitable. Don't do you think that they? I mean, what, you think in 10 years Microsoft's going to disappear from the face of the earth? No.
No. You know, this is a huge company. They don't right. just stop. You know, people aren't going to drive into the parking lot one day and see a chain over the door. You know,
all done.
Yeah, we're done. Yeah, we've concluded our operations. Thank you for. No. And by the way, it's not. You know, and I'm not writing Microsoft off, and I don't think Mary Jo is either. You know, this is a company that's still capable of wonderful things and probably will do wonderful things. Windows 7 is arguably a wonderful thing. It's not a new thing. You know, it's within the context of what they've always done best, you know, that 0.1 release or whatever. Right. You know, Microsoft has always hit the nail on the head, you know, when they've had a chance to refine something that was lacking before. So they've done that again. That's great, you know. But obviously you're looking for something new and exciting and the future, you know, whatever that might be. And I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm just saying that there's a corporate culture over there and just a sheer size and bulk that is getting in the way, you know, and they need to address that somehow. And I don't have an answer. I'm just a critic, you know, I make complaints, but I don't have an answer for Microsoft's ills.
So really what Dick's written, if I can sum up, is no surprise to those of you, those two of you who have covered Microsoft for a long time. In fact, I kind of gathered that already from the kinds of things that you said in the past, Paul. Would you say that's true, Mary Jo? No surprises in any?
No, I mean, not really any surprises. Only surprising that he did it now and that he basically named names, which
six
people don't
later.
Usually do.
Right. And that, of course, that's why it's getting a lot of coverage, is the dish as much as.
Right.
Right. Paul, you'd agree? No surprises here?
Yes, I would. I mean, I want to pick it apart. You know, it's hard not to want to do that because, like I said, the Monday morning quarterback stuff bothers me. The only surprise, such as it was, is just the specifics, like Mary Jo said. I mean, he named some product names. And that's always the most interesting part to me. You know, I'd like to know what's going on internally. Right. And I don't mean that from a human interest standpoint. I mean, I'm interested in the products.
Right.
You know, I'm interested in products that almost came to market, never came to market. You know, I like to know about stuff like that. It's interesting to me. And there was a little bit of a glimpse into that stuff in this editorial, and it made it certainly worthwhile to me.
So, okay. So, good dish, but nothing surprising. A little odd that he comes forth 6 years later, but I guess the timing is he was in the tablet
sure.
division.
And maybe that was the point. He was on the tablet team.
Yeah, he saw the future, and it didn't happen at Microsoft. It happened at Apple. Maybe. Actually, you know, it is presuming one thing that is not for sure, which is that the iPad will be a success.
Sure.
Apple, you know. Well,
did you see the SNL skit about the iPad?
No.
It's like, we're selling another thing that does the same thing as our other stuff.
Only different.
That was their complete overview.
Yeah, that's it.
That was it.
That's it. And we hope you'll buy this one too. Yeah. So it's presuming some success on the part of Apple. And, you know, frankly, Apple's about the same age as Microsoft. Apple could very well be following, you know, be next in line right down the chute with Microsoft.
But again, you know,
and then Google in 20 years and on and on and on.
So that's an interesting discussion. You know, Apple is, if anything, older than Microsoft or about the same age. They're perceived as being newer, right? Because you sort of look at Apple now as it started when Steve Jobs came back, you know? So now we have this company that's only, I think of that as 10 years, but it's actually been 13 years, something like that. You know, this is a company that's been on an upswing ever since that happened, basically, an almost steady lineup, you know? So there is an interesting comparison to be made between the modern Apple and the modern Microsoft.
Right.
You know?
Right. And finally, to wrap it up, is I know it's your job just to criticize, just to tear down, just to ruin and make light of, but is there...
I'm like a barbarian.
You are the Visigoths of journalists. Yep. But no, but is there a prescription? Is there any? Is there anything Microsoft could do at this point that could change? It's kind of like, let's pretend Microsoft is Scrooge and you're the ghost of Christmas future.
Yep.
What would you do?
What time points would I point? You know, where would I point at?
Yeah, where? Well,
you know, Microsoft screamed so violently during their antitrust trial in the United States. I think that if they could have done it over again, they would have handled that differently. I also think that the way they've bent over backwards to appease the EU is a mistake. So they've really hit the extremes on both ends. And I think that there's a happy middle ground that could be had. Although splitting up the company is certainly not a middle ground. You know, I honestly believe that if Microsoft had split itself into three different companies when it was being forced to, if it had just agreed to that, things would be very different today.
Right.
But, of course, that's speculation, and I have nothing.
And it's hindsight.
You know, there's no proof to that, of course.
How about going forward? Is there anything they could do? I mean, I thought bringing in Ray Ozzie sure seemed like the kind of move.
And it's just like more of the same.
Yeah. What a surprise. Yeah. But I guess
I think one thing.
Go ahead, Mary Jo.
Well, one thing they're doing that I think is positive is that I referenced this earlier, this whole incubators concept, you know, where they kind of let people go off in these splinter teams and really see how something's going to kind of flesh out before they try to figure out how to commercialize it. So an example of something that's been in that situation is Azure, actually. It started in an incubation team, and now it's actually a product, the cloud product. And another product that's in an incubation right now is Midori, the infamous Midori.
They own Midori?
Operating system.
Operating system. That's something else.
They own it. Yes, that green operating system.
Huh. It's great.
It's
all the rage these days.
Yeah, is it melon flavored?
It is. But, you know, I think if they can do a couple of those kind of things and actually bring them to fruition and show that concept can work, that there's at least a glimmer of hope that it's not all over and they're not just living in the past.
You know, it may take something very violent from a, you know, market share, financial perspective for Microsoft to make this turnaround. You know, it may require these fading markets to just fade for good, because, you know, it's hard for Microsoft, I think, to
put traditional products on the
back burner.
I got $6 billion this quarter. You're saying I have a problem, right?
Yeah. In other words, you're saying the future is the cloud, but I just sold 60 million disks.
Right.
So screw you.
I mean, they're very successful, and that makes it hard to change.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think they have some interesting stuff that they can do around, you know, hosted exchange and the office in the cloud and all that stuff. I mean, I really do feel like they've got something in each spot. You know, Windows Mobile still has sort of a heartbeat and could be something interesting very soon. You never know. You know, I don't see any success on the digital media front for Microsoft. I honestly feel that at some point they're going to have to just mature enough to say, we're done. We give up.
Yeah.
And then go to Apple and say, what can we do to make what you're making work better on Windows? You know?
Wow.
No, seriously. I mean, just...
Wow.
Let's just accept the fact that you own this market, and we're not going to... We have chiseled away and done nothing. What can we do? You know?
Hmm.
That would be the right thing for customers. You know, it's not necessarily the right thing for those people that, you know, own those different properties at Microsoft, I guess. But for the six people,
I almost feel, I don't know if you feel this way, Paul. There's two Microsofts, right? There's Microsoft, the enterprise company, and Microsoft, the consumer company, right?
Sure.
And the set of strategies each of those sides needs, to me, is so different.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Yep. Right. That this thing could be one business. Yeah. I agree. You know, but it's odd because when you look at Windows 7 this last quarter, this might have been an anomaly of some kind, I guess. But, you know, for the first time, a significant portion of people who bought Windows bought a box, right? That never happens. They always get it with a PC. Most of the people who got Windows 7, regardless of how they got it, were consumers. They weren't business users, right? There's still a strong market there on the consumer end, but when you look at their other stuff, there isn't really much of a market anymore. You know, Windows Live is part of Windows now, so we don't really see how those guys are doing. I bet they're doing really bad. You know, I mean, I don't think they're making any money at all. I really don't. And this past quarter, again, in many ways, an anomaly across the board, but, you know, nothing else at Microsoft was making a lot of money necessarily this time, or at least growing in any appreciable way. Yeah, I think that splitting Microsoft into companies that served specific markets would make a lot of sense. I think the enterprise business that Microsoft has will always be strong, and it shouldn't be shackled to this other stuff. You know,
what's the reaction been to the article? Have people anger, resignation?
Well, like Mary Jo said, I was standing on a ledge of sorts after I read this. I'm always concerned when I see stuff like this in the mainstream press. You know, I'm always, well, it's one thing for, you know, someone like me to throw something up on a blog. I mean, who reads that? It's just guys who like tech, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, but the, you know, an editor on the Wall Street Journal, my mother doesn't read the Wall Street Journal, but, you know, she could. I mean, that's the type of thing where, you know, someone someday is going to be like, hey, I read this thing about Microsoft. What's that all about? You know?
Right.
I mean, it's disturbing in a way. You know,
it didn't really. I mean, their stock price is down a little bit. It's at $28 now, down 57 cents, which is about 2%. But the truth is, I think the stock market has known this for a long time. Its stock has been fairly stagnant.
Sure.
Although, if you look at the, actually, I take it back. If you just look at the last, say, year, it is kind of trending down.
Actually, last year it's been trending up a little bit, but this is after over a decade of it trending nowhere.
Right.
I mean, Microsoft's stock has been flat forever.
Right.
And that was during a lot of a big time period where they're doing great. You know, they were beating records every quarter. So,
It wasn't enough. Wall Street kind of had this. I mean, Wall Street was saying what Dick Brass just said in public.
Well,
that I don't think we just don't believe
I don't think the stock market makes a lot of sense, period. But I think that what was happening there was simply that Microsoft was on a hyper growth trajectory for so long that when that slowed down, as it inevitably must, the stock market reacted accordingly.
Right.
You know, they were, even though Microsoft was a mature company, they were treating it like it was still an upstart. Why isn't it rising as fast as it used to? You know, Microsoft acted that same way internally. That's why they got in trouble with the government.
This is the,
what are we looking at?
That's a 2-year graph to bear out what you say, which is 2 years ago.
I was just puzzling over that.
It's a big V. And the bottom of the V is March of 2009.
What happened on that day?
Well, I think the stock market kind of had a bad couple of.
That was the day that the Windows Weekly podcast debuted.
this decline is the decline, general decline of the stock market, and like the stock market, it had been trending up. Although for the last month, it's been kind of not so good.
And it's like the iPad effect, right there.
Maybe that's it.
You know?
Maybe this whole thing is this whole darn thing is the iPad effect.
Stupid iPad.
Why are you on a? All right. I think we've moaned and groaned enough.
I don't think so.
Let's do more. More moan. But it sounds like nothing new here. Some interesting information. I'd love to see some people write some books, and maybe this will release a flow of that kind of information.
Right. So to the Mike Nashes and Dick Brasses of the world, I would love to write a book, you know, about the insider Microsoft stuff. That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'd love to read such a book.
Right. Yeah. No kidding. I would too. We haven't ever seen that. Mary Jo, well, weren't you embedded for a while at Microsoft writing a book or something?
An embedded journalist.
Were you an embedded journalist at that point, at any point?
Yes, I was flipping burgers in cafeterias there.
She also had to wear those desert fatigues, like...
Greg Zachary wrote that great book about the development of NT, and I think that's the last time that anybody's kind of...
That was a great book. Yeah, Showstopper.
No, during the Microsoft antitrust trial here in the U.S., there were a bunch of great books. Well, I should say a bunch of books written about Microsoft at that time, right? The best of which was probably... World War 3.0.
Right. Ken Auletta's book.
Ken Auletta. But there were a number of them, right? There were a bunch of them. But it seems like there haven't been any, not really, since then. You know, there have been a couple of books about Google that have all come out in recent years. And you know, some of them are okay, but...
Well, if you wrote a book that was like a business book, like, What Would Microsoft Do? Or Follow the Microsoft Way? I don't think it'd sell.
Right.
I don't think anybody would run out and say...
I got to make it. We'll make a T-shirt that says that. What would Microsoft do?
What would Microsoft do? You know, Dick brings up the what we kind of mocked, which was the churro commercial. I think some will say, if looking back, that might have been the nadir.
You know what, though, except for one thing, and that's another great Monday morning quarterback moment. By the way, to your credit, you ridiculed it at the time. I thought they were cute, but I didn't understand what they meant. And of course, they only made two of them, so it's kind of unclear what the point was, but. You know, that could also have been an interesting turnaround point, because those things, as much as we may laugh at them, were part of a campaign to turn around the public mindset about Windows. And by the way, that was actually pretty successful.
Except that they, as typically happens, abandoned it two commercials in because they got scared.
Sure.
I mean, you know, you in for a penny, in for a pound. We'll never know how good a campaign that was, will we?
No,
because they and this is kind of it in a nutshell is the lack of this, and I think that's where somebody like Steve Jobs, you need where a not so benevolent dictator who says these are the marching orders, and I am not wiggling my butt for Jerry Seinfeld. This is how we're going to.
It's not just you can't just have that kind of person. You know, Steve Jobs is actually Steve Jobs is a special person in many ways too, because he also has his incredible design sense and class and. He understands product design in a way that others don't. You know, there aren't many people like him. There are lots of people who are jerks, and there are
It's easy to find jerks in the business.
Yeah, jerks are no problem. You know, finding someone who has all of these qualities and can make the right decision again and again and again. Come on. Is there another person that we could even bring up who's anything like that?
No, I don't. Although, I think that some of this is timed around Bill Gates kind of losing interest, moving on, becoming a philanthropist, and maybe losing Bill was important part of the
right. And actually, that brings up something I meant to.
Well, let's take a break because take a little break because we got so much to do and I want to get a commercial in here before we go on. But
45 minutes in,
this is a great conversation and we have more topics to talk about. Although Mary Jo, we won't make you stick around for the Windows Server conversation unless
that's not true. You have to stay around for that.
Oh dear, I'm so sorry.
No, I'm just kidding.
You're roped into this, Mary Jo.
You could feign a connection.
No, I want to talk about Vail. Vail is exciting.
Oh, good. All right. Skype's breaking up on me. Let's talk briefly, though, about GoToAssist Express. If you're in the IT business, I know a lot of you are, or you maybe even more of you support family, friends, software. GoToAssist Express is from the folks at Citrix. They know, remote access. I mean, they basically remote access equals Citrix. You look it up in the dictionary. They've taken their remote access platform and made it, tuned it for the IT and support professional. So it has features that everybody in IT says, finally, the ability to run 8 sessions at the same time. So you start an install or a scan, and you just go to the next one. You don't have to wait. You don't have to start playing World of Warcraft while you're waiting for the thing to do its thing. You can do unattended support, too, by the way. Very easy for your clients. I use it with my mom. Okay, so what I do is I get on a chat with my mom and I give her a link. She clicks the link, and without any previous software install, I'm now in her computer and I can fix it. It's just fantastic. I want you to try it free for 30 days. I think you'll find a lot of uses for it. In fact, I got to warn you, you're gonna get hooked on it. They do have day passes. They have a variety of ways to pay, but free for 30 days. Try it. GoToAssist.com/windows. Never been a security problem with this. Uses 128-bit SSL encryption. Very reliable. 24/7 support for you. If you need some help, you won't. It's just about as easy as can be. Go to assist.com/windows. We would ask you to do us a favor and give it a try. You'll do yourself a favor if you do. So go ahead, Paul. I interrupted you.
That's okay. What I wanted to do is go point by point through both these articles and just explain every single thing they said again.
No! I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud? Right.
I'm just kidding. I have a lot of free time on my hands.
Yeah. What happened? You've tired of Modern Warfare 2?
No, I just wanted to say, it had occurred to me earlier that when you think about Bill Gates leaving the company, and then, of course, in the wake of what happened with Windows Vista and sort of a new crowd coming into the Windows team especially, one of the interesting side effects of the old guard leaving is that there's also there's the chance that a lot of new people will show up and that some of them will, in fact, make a difference. You know, we had that hope for Ray Ozzie. Mary Jo will remember back when they showed off the first Vista stuff, which was called Longhorn at the time at that PDC. There was a guy on stage called Hillel Cooperman, who I never heard of and was fascinated by. And of course, he lasted about 6 months. But, every once in a while, there'll be some new, person at the company who possibly could make a difference. So even though there are a lot of people leaving the company who had been around for a long, long time, it's also possible that there will be, newcomers, younger people, perhaps, who could make a big difference. So there's always hope, that someone will come along that will make a big difference.
Maybe the kids can fix it.
They are the future.
I think that he also makes a case that we kind of do need a robust Microsoft. No one should wish Microsoft ill, I guess is what he's saying, because however, even if you're an Apple fan, however you feel about Microsoft, we need this company to be successful, to be vibrant. It's an important part of the U.S. economy, the Washington State economy. A lot of innovation comes from it. I think that's a good point, too. I mean, let's root for Microsoft anyway.
Go team.
Go team. Come on, Steve. We're counting on you.
Rah, rah.
Sis, boom, bah. Hey, at least they've got Veil.
They do have Veil. They got that going for them.
Oh, I'm sorry. I fell asleep briefly. Veil? No, you guys love Windows Home Server. Mary Jo, you said, I love Veil. She said it. I heard her say it.
I love Veil. I don't even know what Veil is.
Paul is a big fan of Windows Home Server.
That's... Yeah, so the current version of Windows Home Server is based on Windows Server 2003, which, of course, is getting up there in years. The current version of Windows Server 2008 R2 is based on Windows 7, so much more modern technology and so forth.
Time, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the big questions has been, when's this Windows Home Server version of 2008 going to happen? And that's codenamed Veil. So it's the second gen Windows Home Server. Not a lot of information had been known about this until fairly recently. I actually found out, I think I mentioned last week, I had been briefed about this long, long time ago. I finally found out when that was. It was November 2008. So it's been in the gestation period for a long, long time. But last week, a build of Veil, a very early build, leaked out, and various people have installed it. So Raphael and I installed it, and he has tools that he created for the book that we worked on that can look internally at the software and list out the features that it exposes. So there's some information in there that he was able to find out that isn't necessarily in the UI right now or isn't obvious and so forth. But one of the first things he came across was he asked me if I had heard of something called Aurora, and I hadn't. And we asked Mary Jo Foley about, or he asked Mary Jo Foley about that. And I don't remember, had you heard of this before? Raphael mentioned it to you? Uh-oh.
No, I hadn't. I had not heard of it. But when he started describing it.
No, I'm here.
You guys still hear me?
Okay, I heard a dropout sound.
Oh, that was my nose hitting the microphone. I'm okay now.
Okay.
So did I. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, I was going to say, I knew there was a new version of a small business server coming. And Microsoft won't talk about that at all. And so then when Raphael started describing it, I was like, oh, this must be the next SBS, the one that's built on Windows 7.
Right. And that is what it appears to be.
And lo and behold, it is.
Yeah. So Windows Home Server and Small Server, and then the next product up, which is called Essential Business Server, or is that right? EBS? Yeah, Essential Business Server, are all part of, I think, what Microsoft calls the Windows Server.
Windows Foundation, I think.
So Foundation is the low-end version of Standalone Server, and then EBS is the mid-market server, I think. Anyway, they're all part of the same family of products. So apparently they're going to share some infrastructure, including the admin console. So one of the issues with the current version of the Windows Home Server product as it stands today is the admin console is a very strange remote desktop experience. It comes out at a fixed resolution and it's really kind of lousy. So the one of the big things in Vail is that this has been completely overhauled and it's beautiful. It's really, really nice. But it integrates with Windows 7 features like Home Group, and media streaming. It actually utilizes a Silverlight player. So if you access your server content remotely, you'll play through any modern browser over Silverlight, and it's beautiful. It looks just like Windows Media Player, and it supports virtually every video codec known to man. So that's really nice. So it looks like an interesting product. Of course, what we don't know about it is when it's coming out, what the full feature set is. Why is this version marked as premium? You know, suggesting there's a basic version of it as well. What are the differences between the two? We don't know. But, you know, it's funny as you sort of spelunk around in these products, you come up with more information, but you also come up with more questions. It's like watching Lost, you know. it's kind of hard to tell what's going on in some ways. But anyway, there's some interesting stuff there. So, and there was also this week a new version of Windows Server aimed at schools that I had never heard of, and I can't even remember the name of it. But are you familiar with that? That was something that was also leaked this week.
I'm forgetting the name of it too. It's the classroom server thing, right? Yes, multi-point.
Exactly. I think so.
Multi-point.
Like that.
Raphael is in the chat room. He says multi-point.
Yeah.
Hey, Raphael.
Kick him, please.
Oh, yeah. There is a rule against saying multi-point, I believe. Is multi-point like SharePoint?
No.
Okay.
Well, actually, SharePoint's probably in there, but maybe that's the point of the name. I don't know. I assume that what the name has something to do with the notion of, you know, broadcasting a desktop or some content out to multiple desks,
multiple points,
in a classroom type situation.
I think it's pronounced multi-point, actually.
Multi-point?
Yeah. Just to make it more fun. Good. Anything else? I'm sorry, I'm not really paying attention, so you'll just have
This is home server. It's not real server, so it's actually kind of interesting.
No, I like home server is marginally better, and people are berating me in the marginally better. It's server, but people are berating me in the chat room for not doing a enterprise show.
Right.
And I think that the last 5 minutes tell you why we don't do that.
I still think you should do one, by the way. I'm not saying
I'll
have
do one.
To do
if
it
I
personally.
Could find somebody dynamic and exciting, you guys want to do it? We should have it on the network.
No, I want nothing to do with that. But I still think you should do it.
I agree. I think we should. Mary Jo, you want to host a enterprise computing show? I guess not.
Sure. I love enterprise computing.
Yeah, sure. I love Vail. Anything, whatever. Good. She's happy. Windows 7, Paul, you have a note here about battery life issues on notebooks with Windows 7?
Yeah, apparently, Mary Jo might know more about this than I do. I've not really heard a lot about this, and I certainly hadn't experienced it myself, but apparently a lot of people, mostly, I guess, who have upgraded XP or Vista machines to 7, have been complaining in Microsoft's support forums that the battery life has gone off the deep end. In fact, that oftentimes there is no battery life to speak of. And Microsoft is officially investigating this. And what they're saying is that there appears to be an issue in the software where it's, you know, probing the battery to find out what the life is. And it's being reported as almost nothing when in fact the battery is actually okay. So I don't know if Mary Jo, have you covered this at all? This is not something I'm hugely familiar with, but it's something
yeah,
they are looking.
I've heard some complaints about it, and I looked into some of the TechNet forums, and there are a lot of complaints in the forums about it. But it wasn't until this week that anybody had even contacted me about it or asked me about it. So I'm not sure if something changed this week or not.
I think what changed was someone finally covered it as sort of a news story.
Yeah. As opposed to just people complaining in the forum.
Someone went to Microsoft and said, hey, are you ever going to do anything about this? And so they issued a statement, and now everyone can republish the statement and it becomes a news
now
story.
It's news,
My understanding is that people have been complaining about this since last July before Windows 7 was even finalized, so that some of these people had experiences during the beta. And, you know, it was a feedback-driven beta, so I'm kind of surprised they didn't latch on to this issue. But, you know, apparently it's been around for a while. So,
one of our chatters, Spartacus, says that Windows 7 on his notebook gets to 58% battery and just shuts down. It assumes 58% is done. And so maybe it's more like that.
I mean, all I can say is I have run Windows 7 now on easily 15 different laptops, and they range in age, I mean, from an 800 megahertz Celeron ultra-mobile PC, by the way, tablet-type computer. I mean, all the way up to a brand new you know, ThinkPad Edge that just came in this week. And I have never experienced this on any of these machines. So that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But, I mean, I have to wonder what the circumstances are that cause this, whether it's a certain kind of BIOS or a certain set of circumstances or what it might be. I don't know. But I have not experienced this.
And there's no truth to the rumor that there's a sudden acceleration problem with Windows 7.
That's right. No. No deaths have been linked yet.
But that recall, you know, you never know. You know, we've been talking to Microsoft about the Bing product, and I have Bing on my iPhone, and Apple supposedly talking to Bing about becoming the default search engine on the iPhone. Bing, I thought. To be honest, we've seen so many companies go up against Google and just kind of disappear.
Right.
Remember Cool, spelled C-U-I-L? You know.
No, I don't, Leo, even though I recommended it.
I just one of many. And so I think a lot of us just thought, yeah, Microsoft will put a lot of money into advertising and the people will get Bing will get a lot of attention and then just fade away like these other guys. And actually, Bing seems to have some legs.
Well, it's continued to grow, but it also I would just say it's been very modest growth, right? And largely in the United States, where Bing, by the way, has more functionality than it does in a lot of the rest of the world. So a lot of the best features of Bing aren't necessarily available everywhere. Bing on the iPhone is fantastic for whatever that's worth. That's a great app. In fact, it's better than
I like it.
The equivalent app on Windows Mobile, even the new beta version. Yeah. It's still much nicer than any of the other custom Bing apps they've
but
made.
But searching is such a habituated thing that I find that I have to remember to go there, you know, and I just...
And right. And how do you change people's habits like that? I still use Alta Vista for that same reason.
No. No. Please say you don't.
I just use the web archive now. I don't even browse the modern web. you know, it's funny. Microsoft executive Yusuf Mehdi, another guy who's been around for a long, long time, you know, said this week that Bing would be profitable and would be successful. But, you know, the key to that isn't so much all the innovation they're doing around Bing, although there's a lot of good stuff going on there. It has more to do with consummating that Yahoo deal and arriving at roughly 30% market share in the U.S., which would be the best market for that, and being a decent number two player aside Google that can attract the advertisers. You know, advertisers obviously want there to be some competition, and I think there would be a better market for Bing. And what they're saying is that, yes, we've put, you know, $5 billion in R&D into this thing so far, although I think that underplays how much they've spent on it, because obviously they were doing R&D on Live Search for years and years before that, before it became Bing. So however we choose to rewrite history, I guess the success of Bing, such as it is going forward, will be based on whether or not this you know, Yahoo deal is ever consummated.
Right.
So I guess we all have to cross our fingers.
Cross your fingers.
That it happens.
That you get a machine that goes Bing. We're going to take a little break, come back with your Windows 7 feature of the week and a warning for those using the Windows 7 beta or beta, as they say in Britain. We want to make sure that our listeners in Britain don't feel left out. I do want to mention our friends at Astaro Corporation. Astaro has been around for some time. We've talked about them for years. In fact, I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure they were the very first advertiser on the TWiT network was Astaro. And we still love Astaro. The Astaro Security Gateway is the bulletproof, hardened device that you need, the UTM that you need for your small enterprise. I know we don't talk about enterprise computing, but when it comes to security, this is the box I'd like you to take a look at. In fact, you can get a free demo from Astaro by calling them. If you're in the U.S., 877, the number 4, A-S-T-A-R-O. Outside the U.S., just surf to the website, astaro.com. You get that free demo unit for your place of employ. Let me tell you, though, what this little box, and there are a variety of different ones, but I use the, which one do I have? Can't tell. But it's just about the size of a router, except made with, you know, heavy gauge steel. It really feels solid. Inside, best of breed in both open source and commercial security software. Of course, a top of the line firewall and intrusion protection system, but also a lot of very useful stuff for securing your enterprise, anti-spam, anti-phishing. All the email has is scanned for viruses by two different engines. All the websites are scanned for viruses. And as the web becomes really the primary vector for malware, that's really important. Of course, complete content filtering, instant messaging, peer-to-peer control, so you can, you know, keep your employees on task. I like this. It's got built-in encryption as well, SMIME and OpenPGP. That happens transparently, so all the email coming and going from your enterprise can be encrypted on the way out, decrypted on the way in, automatically signed, automatically verified. You get to control that. Very flexible. In fact, if you have multiple Astaro security gateways, they've got a great dashboard, the Astaro Command Center, that's free for users of the ASG that lets you manage and control multiple gateways from a single dashboard. I can go on and on. You know, you can try it for free at home. In fact, they have a very liberal license for non-commercial use. If you go to astaro.com, you can find out more. In fact, they used to charge you 80 euros for the Astaro up-to-date program yearly. Now that's free too. Astaro.com to try it or get a free demo in your office by calling 877, the number 4, A-S-T-A-R-O. When you ask the experts, they all agree it's Astaro. That's the one you want. Let's get some more Windows 7 information for people who installed the RC, and I include myself. Time is we got till March, right?
So the schedule is that on February 15th, the OS will begin alerting you that the auto shutdown period will begin in two weeks.
That's scary.
And yeah, so beginning on March 1, these systems will begin auto shutting down every 2 hours if you just leave the thing sitting there. Even if you're in the middle of using it, it will literally just shut down. And then that will go on all the way through June 1st. And then a Windows 7 release candidate expires. The OS is marked as non-genuine. That gives you all those side effects. You know, the screen goes black and you get little pop-ups and so forth. So, you know, I'm curious. I do get email from people who are still running the RC. And it's interesting. I mean, it seems like there are a lot of people out there that are still doing that. So there's no supported upgrade path, which I think is the number one question I get, you know, if they want to upgrade from the RC to the final version. But that said, you can actually perform a workaround to make that work if you really want it to.
Is it that modify that text file that says...
Yeah, it's the same thing that worked from the beta to the RC.
Yep.
I don't recommend that, but I...
Look at these people with battery problems. It looks like it's people who did the upgrade, right? You
know? Yeah.
Don't do it. Start fresh.
Right. There are always reasons not to do this kind of thing. So anyway, those workarounds exist if you really want them. But, you know, I don't recommend it. This is obviously should be a chance to start fresh. So, you know, and the other thing is, you know, I've gotten some emails and I've gotten more than one of these actually from people who are looking for, you know, is there some kind of a deal? You know, I am running the RC. Is Microsoft offering anything to me?
Right.
And the answer is no.
So, you have to buy Why it. Should you? You've been running this operating system.
I've been kind of a skinflint for the past 9 months. Is there any sort of
can I continue
a private deal that I might
I'd like
get?
To continue to be a skinflint, please?
Yeah.
No, nothing for you. Oh well. What is the cheapest deal now? Is it to buy the upgrade OEM version? I think that's it. It's like $120 bucks from Newegg, something like that.
Probably. Yeah.
That's the one to go.
Now, but, you know, there's an issue here, and I can't recall off the top of my head. Of course, you wouldn't be upgrading anyway. So
you do that work.
You know, the RC version is the Ultimate Edition. So if you don't get the Ultimate Edition, even if you do choose to use the workaround, that workaround won't work unless you have purchased the upgrade, you know, the ultimate version of Final Edition, so which is the most expensive version. So
you need to get a full version.
That too is unlikely.
Is that what you're saying? You need to get a full version if you want to
So strictly speaking, depending on what was on your PC, the Windows 7 RC doesn't qualify you for anything, right? So, but most PCs came with something. So It's inconceivable. It's not impossible, but it's unlikely that you were running a PC that didn't have XP or Vista on it. So XP or Vista both qualify for an upgrade version of Windows 7, any upgrade version. So you qualify.
Okay.
And you can, in fact, perform a clean install using the upgrade version, which is what you should be doing. So if you choose to go the OEM route and you buy an OEM upgrade version of Windows 7, which is cheaper, you don't get any support from Microsoft, and technically you're breaking the law, or at least the licensing agreement, because the licensing for OEM right now is not licensed for individuals. It's designed for people who buy it, build a computer, and sell it to someone else. You can't build it and give it away, and you can't build it for yourself, technically speaking. So assuming that you are, in fact, doing this for yourself, what you should be doing is buying a retail or an electronic download version of the upgrade version.
The cheapest version on Newegg is, in fact, the retail home premium upgrade for $119.
Okay, and that's the one I think most people...
Yeah, they have an OEM, but it's more.
They do.
Yeah, well, if you want professional 32...
Is it OEM upgrade or full?
Looks like it's the full.
Of course, now what am I talking about?
There is no OEM.
There's no upgrade.
Right.
Of course, right.
Okay. It's for a new computer.
Right. Yeah. Sorry.
Windows 7 Ultimate 32-bit 3-pack for OEM, $509. So if you had a bunch of friends, you could do that. That'd be $133 each. Is that right? No. Never mind. That's a bad deal.
Yeah. I mean, there are a million ways to do it, but I think what you're going to want to do is buy either the retail version, like you can get there at Amazon or wherever, Best Buy.
Right.
Microsoft Store offers an electronic download version that you can burn to disk yourself. You could do that as well.
Right. Finally, before we get to our break, the Windows 7 feature of the week. Normally, we lead off with this, Mary Jo, but because you were here, we decided to put it off and talk about Dick Brass.
And you can leave now if you'd like, by the way. This will be boring for you.
So oh, dear. All right.
Should I go to sleep now or no?
Yeah, yeah, just
nod off. That's what I do.
Put the shades on. We won't even know.
I find, you know, Mary Jo, I go get a nice cup of tea, a toasted scone, and I just kind of sit there and I drink.
Sometimes he just gets up and leaves. Actually, I believe once he drove away.
I didn't. You heard the car. I thought I'd be back before you finished. I'm sorry.
I heard the tweet sound is locked. And then
I have a little tip for Paul before he gives his tip.
Ooh.
Okay. Is it a tip for me?
I just
personally
saw this come up.
Get a better haircut.
Keynoting.
Oh, okay.
Guess who's keynoting Mix, speaking of Blast from the Past. Mix is Microsoft's web development and design show, and they just announced Joe Belfiore is going to be keynoting.
Okay,
who I know fantastic.
Paul. Yeah, he's a great guy.
And his new title is Corporate Vice President, Windows Mobile Program Management. And Microsoft just said there are going to be 12 sessions at Mix all about developing for the Windows Phone.
Interesting.
So that's kind of interesting.
Just so Leo knows, you know, Joe Belfiore is a guy, started with the IE team mid-90s, you know, IE3 or 2, I don't remember which one, IE3 probably. He did Media Center, right, the design, you know, the UI. He did Zune. And the Zune HD stuff, the UI there. And now he's on Windows Phone.
Yep.
So the fact that he's on Windows Phone, as are a lot of people who, you know, originated from the main Windows team, points to how much importance, you know, Microsoft is giving that now, right? It's kind of interesting. It's just one of the many reasons I'm not ready to write it off yet.
Okay.
That's it. I just wanted to share my tip first.
That's exciting. And when is Mix? It's soon, right?
It's in March.
It's March, mid-March in Las Vegas.
Good. We're looking for live things to cover. Should we cover that live? You think that'll be worth?
Might be a good one. Although I think you should hold off until we see what happens at Mobile World Congress next month or this month, I guess, in Barcelona, because this is going to be apparently where they unveil Windows Mobile 7. But then I think we're going to get more of a deep dive type thing.
Right.
You know, at Mix.
That's the kind of thing I need to know.
Yeah.
It's like, when's the, you know, people really love it when we go cover those events live. It's just really.
Right.
It's fun for us to do, and it's fun for them.
It's not like an Apple event, Leo, but, you know, we do what we can do.
I know. Hey, Belfiore is going to wear a black turtleneck, blue jeans. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
He's probably one of the closest people Microsoft has to a Steve Jobs in a way.
Good.
Right. And I mean, actually, I mentioned Hillel Cooperman earlier. I mean, Joe is along those lines, I would say. Yeah. He's very excited about technology and he can communicate that. He's a great guy. So, yeah, he's a good choice for that.
So, your tip of the week, or really, it's a feature of the week.
So we do two things now. So, starting last week, there's a Windows 7 feature of the week. And this is just in response to people who have written me in and said, you know, you guys talked about Windows 7 a year ago, and it was really interesting, but now I actually have the thing.
And it means something.
So what I'm going to do with the Windows 7 feature of the week is when I post the show notes, the version of the show notes that I have on my site, I'll link to an article I've written about the feature.
Oh, good idea.
And in some cases, it will be an article I wrote in the past because, you know, we're going to have to cover stuff I've already written about. And then in some cases, it will be something that, you know, is brand new. So, for example, last week we talked about libraries. And I was actually shocked to discover I had not posted an article about libraries on my site. So I took an extract from Windows 7 Secrets, and I put that up on the site, and I linked to that. So if you're really cheap and don't want to buy my book, I suppose over the next 24 months or so, I'll probably just publish the whole thing on the web. So if I do it, you know, do it
bit by bit, inch by inch.
So this week's feature is Home Group, right? And what this is essentially is a way to share the content that is stored in your libraries, which we talked about last week. This is documents, music, photos, and videos over a home network. It's also a way to share printers because it makes sense to share printers as well. The thing that's interesting about Home Groups is that it doesn't actually take the place of anything that came before. All those old-fashioned methods we had in Windows for years for sharing information is still there. So if you want to share files and folders or printers, the old-fashioned way, it's all still there, and it doesn't replace the work group networking scheme that exists before. Work groups are still there; they're sort of secondary now, I guess, in Windows 7 as to what they were before, but they're still available. The thing that's most interesting to me about work groups, but Home Group though, is the name, because one of the things that I discovered as I was looking at this feature back in the beta version was that if you look through the Windows 7 UI, the word Home Group is spelt three different ways, right? It's Home Group, like capital H, capital G, Home Group with just a capital H, and Home Group with no capital letter on any of it. And I actually wrote an article at one point where I talked about inconsistencies in Microsoft's design and so forth. But actually, they got in touch with me, and they said that this is, in fact, by design, and that we spell it different ways in different places for certain reasons. So, for example, Home Group, capital H, capital G, is the trademarked term.
Okay.
And it is that thing that refers to is the name of this feature. It's a Windows 7 sharing feature. Home Group, all lowercase level letters, is the generic thing that is created by the feature. So when you use the Home Group feature to create a Home Group, the thing that you're creating is Home Group, all lowercase. And if you spell it with a capital H, they're saying that's just because it's a title or it's some other place in the UI where an initial capitalization is required. So it is, in fact, in their words, consistent. So, just so you know. Anyway.
It actually makes sense.
It actually, well, if you say so. I'm going to link to a full article about Home Group network sharing, so we don't have to beat that to death on the podcast. But if you check out the site on Saturday is when I will have that up. So, Saturday being the day that I post the show notes. So check back on Saturday. I'll link to a full article.
Very exciting. We do have two tips of the week and a software pick of the week still to come on the show. But as always at this time, we like to pause and get your Audible pick of the week. Let me explain what Audible is first, of course. Audible is the audiobook site that I use and Paul uses and we recommend and we just love so much. 70,000 titles now at Audible, AUDIBLE.com, for you to download. You can buy each a la carte, but people who get serious about listening to audiobooks usually get the Audible subscriptions, and there are a number of subscription plans. We can set you up with the Gold plan, which is the simplest one, the least expensive. It's a book a month. And we'll give you the first book free. So it's a way for you to kind of see if Audible's right for you. Now, Audible books play on most devices. There is copy protection on it. So you have to use it on a device that has software specifically designed for playing back Audible books. But that is almost everything, including the Kindle, the Zune, all the Apple products, iRiver, the SanDisk products. In fact, if you go to audible.com and look at the device center, you'll see a very large number of devices supported by Audible. I just love it. I've got it on my iPhone, but I also have an iPod in the car, and I get in the car and I can, I've got, you know, several dozen books sitting in my car that I can listen to and whatever I'm in the mood for. If it's history, if it's fiction, you know, thrillers or suspense, science fiction, it's all there, and it's all from audible.com. Paul is always reading great Audible books, and I love it that he does these great intellectual tips. Now, I read a book that I loved on Audible. I think I recommended it, called Pompeii some time ago, which was a historical novel about the Pompeii and the eruption of the volcano, and I just loved it. And this recommendation this week, Paul, seems really in the spirit of Pompeii.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. In some ways, it's a mistake. I've been watching the second season of Rome, the HBO series, that. Which isn't is fantastic. I had never watched the second season, so I got it on DVD and finally have been going through it. And I noticed the new book by Robert Harris, and my initial reaction was I saw it as Thomas Harris, the author of the Hannibal books.
Oh.
And I thought, how interesting is this? This guy's written a book about Rome. That's crazy. But of course, it's Robert Harris, who's written a number of books about Rome. And this is the guy who wrote Fatherland, that book we recommended.
Yep. And Pompeii, several months ago, which I really adored. And so I'm thrilled.
Yeah.
That
and
got a
and
new book.
What's interesting about this book is it takes place roughly during some of the scenes from the second season of Rome, the TV series, if you ever watched that.
So well, that was the most exciting time in Rome, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It, much like the time we're now facing with Microsoft. So I thought for all these reasons that this book, which is called Conspirata, I guess, a novel of ancient Rome, which deals with Marcus Cicero when he becomes the consul of Rome. And it ends badly for Cicero, I think is the way I would put it. But an interesting time, as you say. So,
yeah, he was killed by the hammer. His throat was slit and they removed his organs, as I remember.
Yeah, probably all at the same time, too, knowing the Romans.
Yeah.
So,
not the best end, no.
Mm. Yeah, not people, as we say.
People who kill people. This is Conspirata, novel of ancient Rome. Now, this is on sale at Audible right now for $10. So, this is a member special. So, if you're not a member...
So, you might want to start with one of his earlier books.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Because he's written, like I said, a number of books that take place in ancient Rome.
So you could
as well as Fatherland.
Fatherland
is
great, and that's one on my list to listen, and I cannot wait to listen to that. But I loved Pompeii, and I would highly recommend that. He also wrote that. So yes, get one of those two with your free subscription, and then for $9.95, you can get the second Robert Harris book, Conspirata, brand new. They do this all the time on Audible. They've got sales all the time.
You could read a Thomas Harris book. And Thomas Harris actually reads a lot of his own books.
Well, you know what they're doing, which is kind of interesting. At the top of the page, if it's the first book in a series, you can buy it for $4.95. So it's a way of getting you. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
It's like crack.
They're going to get you hooked. But a lot of the series, including the Mists of Avalon, which I'm reading right now, a lot of mysteries, Orson Scott Card's books, science fiction books, are very inexpensive right now. So maybe I'll take it back. Maybe the gold account isn't necessarily the way to go, but certainly if you'd like to try that, it's a good way to get a book free and see if Audible's right for you. Go to audible.com/windows. I don't have a commute anymore. I used to have a terrible commute, but I managed to listen to a book every couple of weeks now just because I prioritize it. It's something I love to do. audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. All right, now I think it would be time for your tip of the week, right?
Well, last week I started doing a Windows 7 tip of the week, and I asked people if they had a specific Windows 7 tip if they could send them in, and I'll be posting those on the site. And what I decided, a couple things. One is I got hundreds of tips, so that's fantastic. I think I have enough for the next year, which is great. But I thought that, you know, one of the things I have several boxes of the book here, and I'm trying to figure out some way to give them away. And I think the way to do it would be if I publish a tip, we mention it here on the podcast, I will give the person who recommended that tip first a copy of the book. So the tip that we had from last week, I've already contacted him, and I'll be sending him a book. And the other thing I want to do is, because I got so many tips, and it takes so long to kind of get them on the site because we're only doing one a week, I'm going to sort of backdate some tips through the beginning of the year. So if we look back over whatever the 4 weeks were before we started doing this, I'll fill those in with tips as well. So again, on Saturday is the day I update my site with the stuff from the podcast. So I'll have a link to the home group article that we mentioned earlier, but also I think it's going to work out to be three or four different tips, additional tips. And then we'll do one a week going forward. So with that as a backgrounder, this week's Windows 7 tip of the week involves Windows Live Messenger. And that if you use this instant messaging client, one of the things you'll notice in Windows 7 is that instead of going to the tray, which it did in all previous versions of Windows, you get these icons in the taskbar. That would be okay, except that there are multiple buttons down there when you only really need one, and it's kind of a mess. Plus, it's adding to the, you know, the size of that thing down there. And I really don't like the way that works. But as it turns out, you can actually fix that behavior. And the way to do that basically is to find the executable for Windows Live Messenger, properties, go to the compatibility tab, and run it in Windows Vista compatibility mode.
Oh.
And when you do that, you have to stop the application first. You can't have it running at the time. When you rerun the application, it will now run from the tray, right, the system notification area, instead of running on the taskbar, which is the way I prefer it, and I think the way a lot of people prefer it. Now, if you open Windows, if I was to start a chat window with Mary Jo Foley or Raphael or whoever, the buttons for those windows will still appear in the taskbar, but that's the normal behavior. The point is the main window and all the little notifications and so forth will all come up off of that little tray icon, just like they did before. So thanks here for this tip goes to Rodrigo Gomez Morales, and I will be emailing him soon so I can get his address, and I'll get a book out to him next week as well.
Great. Thank you for the tip. Both of yous. Both of yous. You actually have another tip. It's kind of
I have a regular tip. So there's a tip. There's a Windows 7 tip and then a regular tip. So. Okay. The regular tip this week is for the Zune HD. There was a price drop today or yesterday. The 16 gigabyte version of the Zune dropped from $229 down to $199. And the 32 gig version is now $269 instead of $299. So, and I noticed too, if you go to Amazon.com, I believe that the prices for each of those are actually a little bit lower at Amazon. So you can save some more money there. So if you were waiting to buy a Zune, and if I understand the sales here, everyone was waiting to buy a Zune. they are significantly cheaper now. And now cheaper than their equivalent iPod Touch models.
Very good. And finally, your software of the week, which I thought we talked about before.
Yeah, so last week we recommended, I think, EaseUS. I'm not sure how you say it. It's EaseUS. To do backup, right? System image backup.
Well, that's right. We didn't recommend this one. We recommended the
backup. Right. Well, Patrick Robichaud wrote and said, I've been using this company's tools forever. They have a number of excellent tools. And another excellent one is EaseUS Partition Manager. And this is the type of thing, running up into Vista, I just zoned on what the name of it was, but I used to use a Partition Magic.
Partition Magic, yeah. Everybody used that.
And I think there was some time period where it didn't work properly with Vista for some reason. I'm not sure if they fixed that or whatever. But obviously, Windows has its own built-in partitioning tools and all that. But sometimes you want to run something outside of Windows or just recover from a recovery mode or whatever. So this is another excellent free tool. And the only downside, I believe it only works on 32-bit versions of Windows if you want to run the software directly on the disk. But again, it's completely free. It's from the same company that released the software that we talked about last week, the To Do Backup, and it looks fantastic. So on his recommendation, I thought I would push that out to everybody else as well.
Really good. Really, really good tip. I'm just going to go to the EaseUS site and just buy everything they make.
Or just download the free versions.
Yeah. Oh, so I mean, like, there's never a charge for this? It's not like a free trial?
No, they sell other software.
They have a pro version of it. Yeah. Okay. So. This is the home edition, I guess. Cool. Mary Jo, we are so glad you decided to join us on the show today. It was really great having you.
And thank you for talking me off of the ledge.
Paul's feeling much better now.
I was like, can I call you? I need to call you.
You saved us. We would have had to find another host. Things,
you know, I read the paper on the Kindle every morning, you know, and I saw this thing. I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. And, you know, my wife is sitting there on the table, but I can't really talk to her about this, you know. I mean, I don't want to bore her with it, and she doesn't care, you know, but I'm thinking, I got to talk to somebody about this. You know, it was killing me. So I was really
happy. Mary Jo can be your Windows wife.
Yeah, yeah. <It's>
like, your Microsoft wife.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I read it too, and immediately I thought of you, Paul, and I said, boy, yeah. Paul must really wanting to be talked to somebody right now.
I wonder what's going on. Somewhere.
So I have sitting here with me Dr. Joyce Brothers right now. And,
right.
No, I'm just teasing you. Mary Jo, really great to have you. Mary Jo Foley blogs for ZDNet, but you can find her blogs and all of her stuff at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's the easy URL to remember, allaboutmicrosoft.com. So glad you could be here with us today. We really appreciate it. And I feel much better too, even though I personally don't.
I got to start charging or
something.
Yeah,
really. You know? The doctor is in. A nickel. Anything. Paul Thurrott is the editor-in-chief of the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com, and news editor for Windows IT Pro. His book, Windows 7 Secrets, will emerge bit by bit on his website, but get the whole thing all printed out nice and pretty, or get the Kindle version. That's what I have from Wiley & Sons. Windows 7 Secrets. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo, and thank you all for being here. If you want to watch the show, we do it live every Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 11 a.m. Pacific. I think it's 1900 UTC at live.twit.tv. Please stop by and join us. Otherwise, subscribe because it's on iTunes, the Zoom Store, everywhere better podcasts are found. Winamp, I'm told, is also a good place to get it now. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.